took forever to get this bunker door open.
Yeah, this thing's been shut for a long time. Whoever was down here must have come down right after the nukes fell.
Yeah, and judging by the skeleton sitting in front of the radio over there, I'd say that guy who was down here's been dead for quite a while.
Oh, he's killed himself. His gun's right by his side, and there's a note on the desk in front of him.
What's it say? It says, couldn't get radio to tune into the Through the Aftermath podcast. My life just can't go on.
Guess he really wanted to hear it.
What channel is his radio on?
It's on Channel 5.
What channel is the podcast usually on?
Channel 6.
Wow, so close and yet so far.
Yeah, that's kind of embarrassing for him. He kind of gave up quick on that one.
Awkward.
Actually, it's about time for the show to start right now. We can use his radio to listen.
Turn it on, quick! Crap, I can't get the signal. There's nothing but static.
No! Oh no! We can't miss it!
I'm kidding. Man, you kind of seemed like your life just couldn't go on anymore.
I see what you did there, and I don't appreciate it.
Our next show, brought to you by the makers of Mr. Handy Robots. He cooks, he cleans, he walks the dog.
He's so handy!
And now, it's Through the Aftermath!
Hello and welcome everyone to this third episode of Through the Aftermath. My name is Sean Schuster, I'm your host, and with me, as always, is my co-host Jonathan. How are you doing there, Jonathan?
I'm doing fantastic.
And where are you calling us from today?
Yeah, I think that's right. Last week I was talking to you guys from the Pulowski Preservation Pod. Today, unfortunately, you know, I have not quite made it back to the studio yet. I'm actually reporting from a crate that I found. Actually, and people are probably wondering, you know, 2 weeks you can't get back to the radio station. No, unfortunately, I was kidnapped by raiders, and I was tortured. They made me watch Three's Company.
Oh,
so yeah, it was. Don't ask where that's coming from. I don't know where they got that broadcast.
Oh man, that'll do it though. Was it with Chrissy or was it with the replacement?
It was with the replacement, and so, I mean, and there are people out there right now that are probably like, look, you know, I appreciate that our future is dark, but I don't want that kind of darkness.
Yeah,
and that's... So, no, there's not, you know, unfortunately, I bring nothing but truth, so I can't tell you otherwise, but, you know, we're going to get through this, you know, there's some damage, but we'll make it.
Just be strong, man. Just be strong.
I'm strong, and I'm under a crate, so, with a handset.
Well, in this show, we're not actually going to have a topic this time, and this is something we'll probably do often, just have a news and email show. And we had quite a few emails, which is why we're doing it this time. And I was actually pretty surprised, pleasantly surprised, at the number of emails we got. We got a nice little handful of them. And most of them are just kind of telling us, you know, good job, and they love the show and everything. So we thought we'd read a lot of those and talk about some of the ones with the a little bit more of a, you know, asking questions and things like that. So we thought we'd talk about those. And also we were going to talk a little bit about some of the latest news. There's been quite a bit of news, and we have some big chunks of a few games and movies and everything that have had quite a bit of news come out this week. So we'll be talking about that. You know, it's kind of a staple in a lot of podcasts where they talk about what they've been playing and what they've been doing. And since we do this every 2 weeks, there's quite a bit that we can talk about. So I was just wondering if you wanted to talk about what you've been playing in the post-apocalyptic world these last 2 weeks, or even if you've been watching something or reading anything.
No, good call. Good call. Yeah, it's interesting you ask me that question because I have both sad news and happy news at the same time. The I recently got a new hard drive. I got a new 300 gig Velociraptor drive, which I was happy about. I was like, oh, good. You know, I've got more space. I can finally keep a lot of my games on there. Well, in the process of trying to transition all of the save game files over, I inadvertently ended up losing my Fallout 3 save games.
Oh.
For some weird reason, you know, when I transitioned them over, including all the mods, and, you know, mods are probably a good and bad thing for that reason when it comes to save games. But when I transitioned them over, instead of being inside the Operation Anchorage add-on, I found myself on the top of a mountain I could not identify, holding a weapon that didn't exist. So my hands were curled like I was holding a weapon, but there was nothing. And so I was like, wow, that must be the game's way of blue screening. So so long story short, after working so long, the second or third time I played this game, you know, well, not all the way through, but, you know, playing again a different character, I have to go back and re-roll another guy. Now, the good news is that I now have to go back and re-roll another guy. So, it like, you know, like my buddy Rob says, you know, he said, if there was ever a game you had to screw up and start again, that game would be Fallout 3. And I said, yes, you're correct. And I intend to blow up Megaton once again and enjoy it for the third wonderful time. So we'll see. You know, this time I intend not to do it again. you know, re-roll another guy after this. I'd like to keep this guy, but at least the good and bad happened out of that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I actually, the first time I played, I didn't blow up Megaton. The second time I did, and it was so much better the second time. I actually had a similar thing happen when I think I talked about this last time. I didn't actually sign up for Windows Live the first time I played through. And then I made my second save game, the bad one, where I blew up Megaton. And then I got Windows Live when the DLC came through, and it basically got rid of all my save games except for the one I was playing, which was luckily the main one that I was playing, the highest level one. So I lost my evil character, basically, and I lost all my other save games. It like kept one save game. But the thing is, I could get those back, but I would have to disconnect from Windows Live. It's like I can choose to either play offline with my old save games, or I can choose to play online, you know, through Windows Live and keep achievements and all that type of thing.
Right.
On the one save game. So I don't know. It's kind of weird, but I think I'm just going to go ahead and stay with the one and stay on Windows Live.
Yeah, Windows Live is nice.
Yeah, yeah, it was kind of cool. I wish I had done it from the beginning because I lost out on a lot of achievements. Mm-hmm. But hey, you know, live and learn. Speaking of Fallout 3, I actually have not been able to play since last time we talked. So that means I haven't even finished the DLC yet because my DVD drive, bless its soul, the thing finally died, and I've had that thing for probably the last three computers I've built. Every time I build a new computer, and that's probably about 5 years. It's probably going back about 5 years. And every time I build a new computer, I just use the same DVD drive, and I just take it out and throw it in there, and it's finally died. So I've had to, you know, bite the bullet and spend the $25 for a brand new DVD burner today. I know, those things are so insanely cheap now. It's unbelievable. It's funny
because
my old one, it was a DVD burner, but it was like 16 speed or something like that, and it wasn't even that great, and it only did the DVD plus R. Like that was back when you had to choose between the plus R or the minus R. So that's how old it is. And when I ordered one today, I looked at it and it does everything. It does dual layer. It does plus R, minus R. You know. Divided by R, it does all of it. It's crazy. And it's like $25.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's just amazing. So I ordered one of those, and hopefully I'll be able to start playing Fallout 3 again.
Well, you know, and it occurs to me that perhaps, you know, your other CD, you know, DVD drive going out could have been because, you know, due to EMP pulse, maybe? Maybe this is a precursor to the oncoming nuclear strike?
That's true. That might be it, yeah.
You know, I've told my wife this many times, and every time I say that, she takes the kids and hides. I don't know. It's
I don't
just
know
me,
why.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that's weird.
We can hope.
But, yeah, that's about all I've been up to. About a week ago, we had that contest, that Twitter contest that we talked about in the last episode, and it was pretty intense. I mean, it was not – I don't know. It was a lot of fun. Basically, what I did – for anyone who wasn't able to participate, is I asked a trivia question on Twitter, and the first person to answer won a Mad Max DVD from Amazon.com. It's a special edition. Well, the good thing about Twitter, and the reason I wanted to do it like this, is because they keep they keep track of when you get a reply, and it's, you know, it's down to the second. So I knew that there would be no disputing who won. So it worked out pretty well. The guy who won, his name is actually, it's Crater, and the last E is actually a 3. And he won, and the disc is on its way. The DVD is on its way to his house. So, you know, congratulations to him. The question I asked was, it was Mad Max related. And I just asked a really simple one. I said, what was Mad Max's last name? And spelling counts. And, of course, the answer is Rokitansky. And he got it in, I forgot how quickly it was. It was something like 10 seconds. It was pretty quick.
Nice.
And what's crazy is there were like 4 or 5 other people who answered within a minute after him. I mean, it was just like, bam, everybody just answered at once, but he just barely beat out the next guy. And it was, but it was pretty intense to see all that stuff just kind of pop up. I kept refreshing the screen and I kept seeing it pop up. And everybody got it right. I mean, nobody spelled it wrong or anything, but unfortunately, you know, there was only one guy who won, as far as, time-wise, you know, who beat everybody else out. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
It's great to see everybody, you know, getting involved. You know, we love doing stuff like this, and we'll continue to do that.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was pretty cool, and it was just kind of an experiment to see, you know, how that would work and everything. And I think it worked out really well. So I just wanted to thank everyone who was there and participating in everything. And it makes it, you know, when you're on Twitter doing a contest like that, it makes it a little impersonal because you're not able to actually, you know, interact with too many people. But other than that, it was pretty cool. So we might try to think of, maybe we'll do something like that again, or we'll think of a different way to do a contest in the future. But we'll probably have more contests like that. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that DVD should be coming to you as long as the convoy does not get attacked. If it does get attacked, you know, we will track down who it is. It could be the same raiders who tortured me. So, you know, I know them by name and face now, so that, you know, it will be easy to dispatch them quickly. Boy, this role-playing stuff we're getting lost in this. This is wonderful.
It's so easy, too. So, okay, we'll break into the news now since we have quite a bit. The first story I wanted to talk about was there's a new movie coming out that's based on the Afterburn comics. This comic book is based on Earth with the post-apocalyptic setting is there's a solar flare. It pretty much takes out the whole Eastern Hemisphere, and everyone who survives is mutated from the radiation and the fallout. So, you know, it's all about the survivors of this and everything. So it fits in our whole podcast perfectly. But they're going to make a movie about this comic book, actually. And there aren't really too many details on it. The guy who's going to be doing it is Matt Johnson. And it says on this article here, it says that he wrote the action thrillers Torque and Into the Blue.
Interesting. Yeah. It's like I'm both impressed and frightened at the same time.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see how that turns out, but it'd be pretty interesting. You know, this is becoming more and more popular where they're starting to make more movies out of comic books, and it's cool to see a post-apocalyptic comic book being made into a movie.
No, absolutely. And this sounds interesting. I like, you know, the solar flare idea is a little bit different than a lot of things we're used to, but that's a good thing. It's interesting to have. I've always found the solar flare idea kind of fascinating. So it'll be cool to kind of watch how this plays out, especially if it's going to be, you know, the movie alongside it.
Yeah. Yeah. And this guy did Into the Blue. So I wonder if he's going to have Jessica Alba.
You know, that would be okay. Perhaps she could mutate. Never mind. I'm just going to stop. Anyways.
Moving on. We actually have quite a bit of a Fallen Earth news. There's a beta, of course, that is going to be starting. Well, actually, it's started now, but they just they announced it last week on the 4th. And before, of course, they were in the alpha, and this beta is it kind of brings a new element to everything because they're approaching it a little bit different. They're still aiming for a release date for Fallen Earth on Q2 of 09. So that's right around the corner, and they're just starting this closed beta, so they still have another step to go. They still have to go to an open beta. And what they're doing, according to this article, is they're basically going to treat the open beta like a stress test. It'll probably be just a really quick little thing, where maybe a week or something like that. And it's going to be, they just want to see how many people can break the servers, basically. So this closed beta is almost like an open beta, and then the open beta is almost like a stress test. So it's kind of confusing, but it's cool that they got this set up. And also, they have this Valentine's Day promotion going on where you can send a Fallen Earth themed Valentine's Day card, and it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. It says something like, "Love is not having to say that's gross," I think is what it says. But you can write your own little blurb in there, and it'll have it on there. But anyway, the point of that is whoever fills out these Valentine's Day cards will have a chance to get into the beta. So if you want to get into the Fallen Earth beta, you can fill this out, and you have a chance. I think it's a 1 in 10 chance to get in. So it's kind of cool. Definitely should check that out.
Well, for those of you who aren't aware, also, Fallen Earth, the devs from Fallen Earth, actually had a developer chat today. And it was interesting. They actually started this off this morning. From today at 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock, they actually had a bunch of the alpha testers get together and play alongside the developers for control of an area called the New Gallows, which is one of the towns in Sector 2. And they led, I guess, 6 teams, each one representing one of the factions of Fallen Earth, to try to take over this town. And I didn't catch wind of how that ended up. It'll be kind of interesting to see how that played, but it goes to show that these developers are really into what they're doing. They're really getting everybody excited, by doing these kind of events, and hopefully that continues. And then, of course, that led into what's going on right now, which is they actually had a House of Commons chat on Stratix.com. And I love those House of Commons chats. Those have been happening since the days of Ultima Online. And so tonight, as we speak, the developers are talking about the game and probably getting all kinds of good questions from all the people out there wanting to know what's going on. And so we'll be talking a lot more about that, I'm sure, in the next episode as well.
Yeah, literally they're doing it right now as we're recording. So
it's true.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that next episode. And also in the Twitter feed, if there are any articles that come out discussing what was said in the Stratix chat, then we'll talk about it on Twitter and next show, definitely. But also, one more little piece of Fallen Earth news was there was a little an interview with he's the lead designer, I believe. Let's see. Yeah, he's the lead designer of Fallen Earth, and his name is Lee Hammack. And this interview is kind of cool because it's almost like a summary of all of the features that we've heard about here and there, but it's nice to have it like all in one spot. And he talks about all the different, like how the class system is going to work, how there's basically no class system. It's a classless system, and whatever skills and everything you choose, that will kind of evolve your character into however you want. Plus, there's 6 factions, and they say that 95% of all items will be player-made. They'll be crafted. They'll be scavenged, actually, and made by other players. So that's really cool. I really like that idea a lot.
That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. It really brings that whole, it makes you feel like you're, scavenging, that's what it's all about. That's what you have to survive and everything. And when you have that element in there, it really makes it a lot better, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I've always been a freak for crafting. And so, and I love this because it plays right into the theme of the game. I mean, one of the things that, people who heard, the Online Gamers Anthology episode about Fallout heard us talk about was how much we love the fact that the weapons could be fixed by using pieces from other weapons, which would make sense in a post-apocalyptic setting. Well, they're doing the exact same thing. Obviously, there isn't like a ton of vendors out there. We're having to scavenge pieces and we're having to put them together to craft items. That's brilliant.
Yeah. And it should be exciting to see how all that works out, definitely. One other thing on this interview that I thought was interesting is at the end of it, he talks about the top 10 things that set Fallen Earth apart from all other MMOs. And I thought this was interesting because it's kind of approached as a humorous thing, but some of these are, some of them are true. I mean, they apply to the game, but some of them are just like, what? Like, I'll go through them. It says, number one, grave robbing is a perfectly acceptable form of resource harvesting. That's interesting.
Well, sure. I'm just kidding.
Number two, we have Bigfoot. Okay. Number three, and Chupacabra. Wow. That sounds exciting. Number four, we can run around with an assault rifle while wearing samurai armor.
Oh, so it is Ultima Online. No, I'm just kidding. I kid. Oh.
Number five, dual-wielding garden trowels is a viable weapon choice.
Priceless. I like that. That was classic.
Yeah, yeah. Number six, Monkey Town. That's all it says. The possibilities there.
Oh, definitely.
Number seven, you can craft and wear 3D glasses, monocles, and top hats. Wow.
That's interesting.
The 3D glasses survived the Holocaust. Can you believe that? Number eight, you can talk to Ballsy Frank. I have no idea what that means, but Ballsy Frank, okay.
He must be an NPC. But can you talk to Farron Brigo? There's the question.
Oh, hey.
Ballsy Frank might help us.
We should see if anybody knows the reference of Farron Brigo.
There you go.
Number nine, oh my god, waffles. I have no idea what
You know what? I love this. If I can jump in here on this and help with this one. Yeah, okay. They mentioned this later. I guess the OMG waffles, oh my god waffles, has been a running joke in the Fallen Earth community, because apparently there is a restaurant in the game called the Waffle Warehouse, and one of the screenshots got released that had graffiti on the side that said, oh my god waffles, but it was spelled like OMG WAFFLZ. So I guess it's taken a cult like status from what they've said. So I'm sure that oh my god waffles jokes will probably be permeating our show on occasion.
Oh yeah, and I wonder how many clans are already formed around waffles.
It could be like, you know, the Hitchhiker's Guide, when we find out that belly button lint is one of the most dangerous things in the planet. Maybe waffles is also a weapon that we were not aware of. That was completely ridiculous. I just said that.
I want to wear 3D glasses and wield a waffle.
Dude, if I could dual waffles, if we could have dual waffles and 3D glasses and fight Chupacabra, I see nothing but potential for this. But we would have to craft the waffle.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. So this last part of this little ridiculous little top 10 is, it says, hide pants, something you wear, not something you do.
So they say. Never underestimate the gamers. Never.
Yes, exactly.
Wow, we were as silly as the top 10 were.
Yeah.
That was, wow.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
So I guess that's basically about it for Fallen Earth, though. There's been a lot of news. I think the main reason there's so much news about Fallen Earth is because it's right around the corner, you know, with the beta and everything starting, and they're really gearing up for this game. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and next up we have some news about Fallout 3, in particular two pieces of news. In one of the articles from Eurogamer.net, they had an interview with Todd Howard where he wanted everybody in the world to know that they had definitely learned their lesson when it comes to Fallout. Don't have a level cap. So in future Fallout games, should they happen, which I'm assuming, you know, there are of course those out there that are alluding that, if he said that, they must already have one in the pipeline, which of course they do. They never planned on making just one. So he just said for future Fallout games, no more level caps, and I'm assuming lesson learned from before, no more end game either.
Yeah, well, that's what he says. Yeah, don't let the game end, and don't have a level cap. Yeah, and that's actually, that kind of brings us into the next part of news about the next DLC. Part of that is that they're going to have a DLC in April that's going to make it so that the game won't end. They're basically going to revive the game so it won't end. And then they're also going to, aren't they going to change the level cap as well?
Yes, the level cap is actually going to go up. I want to say it's 10 levels.
Yeah, that'll be fun. That'd be really cool. Although it's kind of funny, they already have mods out there to make it basically unlimited level caps. So.
Yeah, which is true. So when the download content for real comes out, I'm sure it's going to break all those mods, hopefully.
Exactly.
Which actually brings up a good point. We actually had a comment on virginworlds.com from a guy named Dan. And Dan asked if there was any way to get the new expansion without having to buy the Microsoft points. And the answer for that is, I don't believe there is. I think you do have to have Microsoft points to get it either through Windows Live, which is how we did it, or through Xbox Live. And unfortunately, it's kind of interesting the way they do the points. Anybody who's already messed with them knows this. You can't just buy the points you need. You have to buy them in in packages. You have to buy them in a series of like 800 or 1,000 points or 1,800 points. You can't just buy the 800 you need just for the expansion pack, which is good and bad because you know you're going to use them later for the other expansions. But you know.
Yeah, I was actually going to mention that last week and I forgot. Is that I was a little bummed at the fact that they only come in chunks like that, and the first DLC actually costs a little bit more than the $10 that they say it is. But like you said, we're going to use it next time anyway. So it's not
that's right. Yeah, which brings us into our next piece of news about the expansions. For those of you who aren't aware, the next two expansions got pushed back a month. So instead of having an expansion in February where we get to go to Pittsburgh, and then the month after that where we get to continue the storyline that I will not speak of, it's now been pushed back a month. We now have to wait until March to get the Pittsburgh expansion, which I guess means that it took longer to walk there than they were expecting. Maybe the fast travel wasn't working correctly, so we literally have to walk for another month. And then after that, of course, in April, we'll get the other piece of it, which it's kind of bittersweet because for me, you know, I looked at it as, well, that's just great. Thanks a whole heck of a lot. Now we have to wait another month. But then there's that part of me that goes, well, yeah, except that, you know, we're still having fun with what we got and, you know, it'll be there.
Yeah, exactly. And the first one is called The Pit, which makes sense since it's about Pittsburgh. The second one is called Broken Steel. So, yeah, you can look for those. And exactly like Jonathan said, the thing is that they're going to be exclusive to the Xbox 360 and the PC. And the PlayStation 3 players are getting screwed because they say that they will not receive the downloads.
Which makes me sad because, you know, I have a PS3. I would love to play this on my big screen TV. And it's almost like, oh, well, that kind of, you know, kind of blows. But again, you know, hopefully they release it on a disc later on like they did with Shivering Isles. Now, let me ask you this. Out of the two expansions coming up, which of the two are you looking forward to the most?
Oh, I would say probably Broken Steel. I just think that it seems to me like it's going to be bigger, you know, with the basically taking the end game away and the extra 10 levels and all that. I just think it's going to be like a true expansion. I don't know for sure, though. I mean, this is just speculation on my part. But, I almost feel like, you know, the Operation Anchorage and the Pit are kind of leading up to Broken Steel. Mm-hmm. But I could be wrong. What do you think?
You know, it's interesting, and I'll tell you why I think this. I might have even mentioned this in the last episode, but the one I'm looking for, honestly, is the Pit. And there's a couple of reasons. One is the fact that we're going to see an environment outside of Washington, D.C. And from what we've been told in interviews, this is an area that has not been touched by nuclear attack. I guess Pittsburgh itself, this part of Pittsburgh it takes place in, was not hit. And so what you're seeing is more of an abandoned city than it is a nuclear, you know, wasteland area. And so does that mean maybe we'll get some more, artwork, some areas we haven't seen, maybe some tile sets that we can use for our own modding? I think it sounds almost like they're kind of alluding to that it's going to be this wonderful city. And I guess it takes place between the slavers and the raiders, this big war. But I'm going to guess we're going to see a bunch of artwork that we hadn't seen yet. So that's going to be kind of exciting just for that alone.
Yeah, that would be cool. Maybe some trees or something.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, there could be trees around by then, so.
That'd be cool. All right, so moving away from Fallout 3 news, there's the new Terminator Salvation movie, which is it's pretty timely with this podcast because it's supposed to be a pretty big movie, and it is post-apocalyptic. The thing about it is there's going to be a game that's actually going to be released at around the same time in May of this year. The movie and the game are both supposed to be released. So they have this trailer, this first trailer for the game, for the Terminator Salvation game, and it's for the Xbox 360. And I'm not sure, I think it'll probably be on PC too. I'm not sure though, but this trailer at least is for the 360. And I think that this trailer is amazing. And I know we say that a lot. I know we go through certain things and we're like, yeah, that's amazing. This is amazing. But this is just truly, it looks like it's going to be a great game. It looks kind of a shooter, really action-packed shooter kind of game. But what did you think about it?
You know what? I'm with you on that, and I am so excited about a Terminator game because, you know, it's such an untapped area. Most of the Terminator games that have come out have been borderlining and horrific as far as being good games. Now this is interesting, a little parallel here. The last good game that I remember playing that was a Terminator game, and this doesn't include the arcade game we all loved to play when we were growing up, but it was the I believe it was called Future Shock, and it was the one done by Bethesda, and it's one of their older titles, but they did a Terminator game, and I remember playing it a little bit and loving it to death. So it's exciting to finally see another Terminator game come into play, and hopefully this will be just as good as what the movie looks like it's going to be. And this, you know, hopefully this is the beginning of a wonderful world of running around in the Terminator world.
Yeah, definitely. And you can see from even like there's some concept art that I will link in the show notes that's shows a little bit about what the movie's going to look like. And even the game itself, you see in the game in the trailer, it just shows like a devastated Earth, you know, the classic devastated, you know, wasteland that we love to see, or at least it's like an urban wasteland. And then this concept art for the movie is really cool. It's got this motorcycle on there, which I absolutely love. It's supposed to be a it says it's like a self-propelled motorcycle. And it looks like, I don't know for sure, but it almost looks like on the side it has like a Gatling gun on it.
Yeah, it does. I saw that too. It does look like a Gatling gun. In fact, not only that, there's a couple of machine guns on the front.
Oh, yeah, in the front there, yeah. Wow.
It looks like the cross. It almost looks like if they took like the Cylon Raider and put wheels on it, that's what would look like.
Yeah. That's, wow. That's pretty intense. That, you know, that's supposed to be, I mean, I bet that's going to be a great movie. But the thing is that it's actually garnered a lot of attention lately because of Christian Bale's little temper tantrum that he had. Did you hear about that?
Oh, I did. I listened to it, and I admit I was entertained. Even in anger, his acting blows my mind.
Yeah, so it makes you think that all the movies where he's played just a complete crazy, that he wasn't really acting.
Well, yeah, well, and if I was the director, the first thing I would have thought is anybody getting this? Are we recording? Because,
yeah.
I mean, it was priceless the way he was freaking out, and I admit this, you know, I would love to see, and this is a bit off the subject, but I would love to see somebody take that footage, like actually get the video footage of him screaming and freaking out and combine it with that footage of Chris Crocker, the Leave Britney Alone guy, so that you had him on one side going, "What's wrong with you?" And on the other side is like, "Leave her alone!" And like I said, that's off the subject. It's something ridiculous, but I think if I watched that, I would probably laugh until I threw up.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised it hasn't been made already because there's so many mashups. Like, there's a dance version, and there's all kinds of where people have just taken that audio and just made all kinds of crazy stuff with it. It's hilarious. And you know what's funny is like I was looking on IMDb at the Terminator Salvation entry in there, and it says that it's gone up 975% in popularity. Just like people clicking on it and checking out. And I think it's probably because of that little outburst from Christian Bale.
And somebody out there is probably like, this was a publicity stunt. They did it to get in to put him on the map. And I'm like, you know what? It worked because, I mean, all we needed to do was have, like, if he could have talked in the Batman voice and been like, whoa, rattled through cages, you know, I think that would have been a little more interesting. But you know, that, like you said, though, the footage that they've shown, this concept art, looks fantastic. And you know, be warned, there looks like there's some spoiler-type things on here. One of them looks to be a Terminator factory. And if that is what it looks like, wow. This could be the movie of the summer.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it depends on when it releases. But, yeah, I would imagine they're going for – well, here, it says – oh, okay, release date May 21st. Okay.
Yeah, 21st. Yeah,
that would make sense. So that's cool. Yeah. Moving into a little bit of correction news, I guess you could say. Last week we talked about Hellgate London going free to play. And while that's not entirely false, the transition is a little bit different than we imagined. Like, I guess what we thought what was going to happen, or what was rumored to happen, was that they were going to not shut it down at all. It was just going to go straight free to play. Well, that didn't happen. They actually did disconnect the servers. They shut down everything. But they're still talking about the possibility of going free to play later on. But in the meantime, it's not there anymore. You know, you can't play the game, which I think was probably a very big mistake because people are going to forget about the game.
Yep.
You know, by the time it comes out for free, so.
Well, it was so fast, too. The transition, I mean, the way it shut down wasn't even a, well, we're going to shut down in 1 hour. It was almost like somebody just pulled the plug. And
yeah.
It was a little bit abrupt, but, you know, I mean, I do have hope for that just because they did make mention that they had some expansion pack ideas in the mix and they were going to try to combine some of the gameplay that, like, from the single and the multiplayer together. And I'm curious to see where they go with this, but they better hurry.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got a lot of those style games coming out, not even including Diablo 3, so.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of games releasing this year, so. I don't know. Might be a little too late, like they say.
It's true.
And moving on to another game, we have a little bit of news about Left 4 Dead. There's a survival pack. It's like an expansion pack that's coming out, and it will be free, which will be great. I mean, free is always great, but for Left 4 Dead, plus free equals complete awesome sauce.
Yes.
So that would be very cool. Do you know anything about this expansion, what it'll be about?
What the expansion pack is actually going to do is going to introduce a new multiplayer mode called Survival, which should be interesting because, it is. The whole game pretty much is. So it's probably going to take everything and just ramp it up to the completely insane mode, which is something I think we all are dying to do because if any of you guys have played, you know, the multiplayer mode, it's completely insane. You know, all you need is a couple of people dropping off the roof or grabbing you from the top of the roof and you're playing against real people to know that the game as it stands is already completely dumping you your pants. So having survival mode is going to be fantastic. And then also they're going to add two complete campaigns for the versus mode. And so we're not sure what's all going to be in that, although we do know that there's a Critics' Choice edition of the game that's going to be coming to stores this spring that's going to also include all the stuff for the survival pack. So that's good.
Yeah, and you can definitely count on us to bring you more news when it comes out on that. Because, you know, Left 4 Dead is not only does it count as a post-apocalyptic, you know, with zombie apocalypse and all that, but it's a wildly popular game. It's just insanely popular. I think it's actually more popular than Fallout 3.
Yeah, you know, and that frightens me. But I have to agree with you. Because it falls into the post-apocalyptic genre, we'll let it fly. Now, one little thing to add on to that, and this is something I've been really excited about, I can't wait to see, is this spring they're also supposed to be releasing the software developer kit for this so that people can make their own Left 4 Dead campaigns. And I can only imagine what is going to come flying out of this. And, you know, even some Fallout-style mods. Can you imagine a Fallout mod where somebody can say that the kind of basing it on the whole Necropolis idea of, you know, Fallout 1 and maybe adding it into where you end up in the Necropolis area and there's, you know, feral ghouls or something coming flying out of this. I can't imagine what kind of cool stuff we're going to see just based on what we've seen with Counter-Strike.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I absolutely love mods. And I was just thinking right now when you were talking, that maybe we should have some type of, like, mod of the show. Maybe not every episode, but maybe every once in a while we should talk about, like, our favorite mods. And whether it's for, you know, Fallout 3 or for the upcoming Left 4 Dead ones or whatever, I think that would be a pretty good idea, especially with the amazing ones that have come out for Fallout 3 already.
Absolutely.
I could think of some off the top of my head now that are just absolutely amazing. So, yeah, maybe we should do that sometime. I think the listeners would probably enjoy that.
Yeah, funny you should mention that because I was actually just going to mention a Fallout 3 mod that if the Fallout 3 fans haven't seen it already, they need to go check out for sure. And it is called the Weapon Mod Kit. Have you seen this?
No, I don't
okay,
think so.
Okay, this is mind-blowing. Basically, what it does is it gives you the option to add modifications to your weapons, such as scopes, laser sights, you know, change them so they can be rapid-fire. And this it is absolutely insane what this guy has been able to do with creating this mod. He basically revamped the whole way that the weapons are done. Now, the one bad thing is this is going to kind of interfere with a lot of other mod kits you have that involve weapons. But for all you guys out there that would love to modify your weapons and add all these cool things to it, check this out. Because I think it's even actually been number one on Fallout 3 Nexus's top 50.
Oh, cool.
If I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, check that one out. It's incredible. You have to see it to understand it.
Yeah, so we should definitely do that more. We should talk a little bit more about mods and everything.
Definitely.
I think people would like that.
Okay, so that's, let's see, we got one more piece of news that I thought was pretty interesting, and it's from a website called writethegame.com, and basically, I think it's a collection of developers and game writers, and they kind of get together and talk about, you know, the industry itself. And they have this one called Virtual Dystopia, and it was, it's by, Kira Penny, I think is how you pronounce that name. And I, of course, I'll link it in the show notes, but it's basically breaking down the dystopian societies of, you know, like either post-apocalyptic or whatever. And I think it's really, a really, really interesting read for anyone that's deeply interested in that type of thing. And not to read through the whole thing, but they basically break it down into three main groups. There's anarchic dystopia, which is like, you know, everything is gone and you don't know what to do. And it breaks it down and it describes like how there's violent enemies, limited resources, and tribal style culture. And I think that's interesting. And then it goes into the elite dystopia, which is more like rich versus poor. I guess that could be more like Terminator, you know, Skynet and all that. I think that would be a good way to describe that. Plus, they use the example 1984, which is that's a pretty good example.
Another one to add into that, the elite dystopia, one of my favorites was BioShock. That was another one that played off of elite dystopia. And to be honest, it's funny that, you know, here I am such a freak for post nuclear war type games, and yet BioShock ended up on probably one of my favorite games of all time. That's one that I realized, wow, I dig that kind of dystopia as well.
Yeah, it's, and this article really goes through a lot of the details of it. And they cite war as being a part of this elite dystopia thing. But the third, this last part of it is kind of a hybrid dystopia where that, you know, there's the end of the world and there's the elitism going on. And I think one of the examples they use is Final Fantasy VII, which they said is a bit of a hybrid. But anyway, it's a good read. It's not very long. It's actually a pretty short little article, and it's definitely worth it just to check it out if you're more interested in, learning more about, you know, the definitions of dystopia and kind of breaking it down like that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a great article. It's kind of funny because, you know, we look at the post-Holocaust type, genre in such a wide way of looking at it. And this kind of really breaks it down and kind of makes you kind of think a little more, detailed about what it is that we like about it and what works and, you know, what about it that you like the most.
Okay. So that was the news. And now we're going to play a little segment by John, who you might remember from the first episode, and his segment Out of Print. He's going to talk about the comic book Freak Angels, actually, in this episode. So enjoy.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Out of Print section of the Aftermath podcast. It's me, John. Great opportunity for me to once again talk to you about post-apocalyptic comics. This week I wanted to do something a little bit different. I realised after my last show that I actually sort of was talking about an older comic, and it may not be that easy for you to get hold of, or, you know, why would you want to go out and invest some money in that when you're not necessarily into comics? So I thought I'd try something a bit different this time, and this is by no means means that it's anything less worthy of talking about. I wanted to talk to you about one of my favourite post-apocalyptic comics, as it were, which is called Freak Angels. Now, the great thing about this is actually a webcomic, and you can get it at www.freakangels.com. It's by Warren Ellis, the story, and it's illustrated by Paul Duffield. It's absolutely fantastic. You really should take a look at it. The premise behind it is kind of, yeah, it's meant to be free weekly. It comes out every Friday, so you can get a new issue. In fact, if you follow Warren Ellis on Twitter, you'll get a good sort of heads up of when it's coming out. And it's also very funny to watch him on Twitter because he says some amazingly disturbing things at time. Like one of the things was, I met Warren Ellis and all I got was this. Well, he said he was going to get a T-shirt done. You know when you say, I met Warren Ellis and all I got was this lousy T-shirt, where it was, I met Warren Ellis and all I've got was this neck vein held closed? A little bit disturbing. But yeah, don't let that put you off. He's an absolutely fantastic writer. And the idea behind Freak Angels is, it's kind of set, sort of 6 years ago when the world ended. Now, 23 years ago, 12 strange children were born in England, and they're all born exactly the same time. And these kids are basically, you know, the world ended, and this is kind of the story of what happened next. So these young, gifted children, some of them with some sort of abilities that I'll go on to in a minute, but basically they all live in around Whitechapel. Now, it's kind of a steampunky sort of setting, but it's almost a bit more cyberpunk in a sense, but don't think of like the old Victorian steampunk and pocket watches and all that sort of stuff. It's actually a really nice modern take on this because it's set in sort of like a modern day Whitechapel. It kind of starts with this girl who is, you know, she wakes up and she's like basically regretting the fact that she slept with this kid who appears to be from another side of London. And that basically sort of gives you this straight away that you can realize there's this divide, this apocalyptic event has happened. And basically there's gangs and different turfs and people are sort of very much sort of taking the streets for themselves and they're looking after their own areas. But what's interesting is that, you know, these are kids. They've been put in this post-apocalyptic sector and the end of the world, which we believe is their fault at this point, but I won't go into that. And it's kind of sort of takes off from there and we realise that these kids have to sort of learn to sort of look after themselves and they sort of take on different roles. I mean, some people are sort of remain very childish in a sense, but they have this balance of being very responsible too. Not only responsible for these powers that they have, but also responsible for, you know, looking after each other. They seem to sort of be, enjoying sex quite a lot. I mean, why not? You know, it's the end of the world as far as they're concerned. So that sort of is one of the main pastimes, if you like. And, it's very interesting to see sort of how a younger sort of group of people in this situation kind of behave. So it is really sort of inspiring to me. I find it an interesting take on, you know, normally it's like aliens or there's been a group of people fighting for survival, but for it to be like younger people actually taking control and almost like a little bit Lord of the Flies-y in a sense, but actually when I think about this and somebody's pointing this out to me before, it very much seems to be based on The Village of the Damned, if you're familiar with that particular franchise and stories. So it's very Warren Ellis, who as far as I'm concerned is like the UK king of disaster fiction. A lot of his stuff sort of appeals to me more than sort of some of the other stuff you see around the world, really. I think he's a great writer in that sense. But the Freak Angels, basically, they operate in the London district of Whitechapel. Now, I've lived in and around this area, and it kind of looks like it never sort of left the 19th century, and this comes across in the book very, very well. There's gangs. This particular gang, the Whitechapel gang, or the Freak Angels, are made up of 12, and they've known each other since childhood. But sort of more than that, they actually all possess these psychic powers, some of them quite lethal, ranging from mind reading, clairvoyance, to total control of the mind. But it sort of does strange things. They have purple eyes and pasty white skin, and sort of all look a bit of odd together. But we kind of get the impression that these guys are responsible for what's happened to the end of the world and the way it's turned out. But so it sort of seems that they're sort of kind of unaware of this involvement at this time, right from the beginning. Each of the Freak Angels sort of copes with this in, you know, very, very different ways. Some of them use their powers to indulge the instincts, like I talked about earlier. Circa, she's always in this room, which is basically just a large orgy, and she's conducting it, and that's kind of like what she's chosen to do. And but some of the others sort of take on sort of more responsibilities. Like there's a guy called Kirk who has a lookout tower, and he watches out for invaders, while Carl looks after gardens and food and delivers supplies. Others sort of do various bits and bobs, and it's kind of like the youth have sort of taken control, but you also get this very strong sense of fighting for survival and looking after your turf and how dangerous it can actually be because people might want to come and steal your food and you have to really protect your interests. So it's really good from that point of view. It's a bit more sort of realistic and gritty in that sense. And also, you know, right near the start of the beginning, you know, you get a sense of this, not just locally within London, but a girl from Manchester turns up and she's like really cross and, she's wielding a shotgun and events unravel from there. So it's really great the way that Paul Duffield sort of brings this grittiness to the show, and the art is great, and it's quite sort of detailed and graphic and naughty, and you know the people are quite young, you know, they're in their 20s to 30s, and it's really interesting. It's great to sort of see how he's portrayed that, and as for the story, I mean, it just moves along so well, you know, with the first girl, KK, just there straight away setting this scene, and you sort of see her in this steampunk environment, and she's got like this steampunk copter thing that she flies about in, and it really sort of sets the scene as she flies across the city in this thing, and you get the idea of like the two sides of the river in London, you know, the Thames, and it's really good. I'd give it an opportunity. I think there's something like 44 issues up on the web now. You can read it right back from the beginning. If you do like it, you can go out and buy it. I know some people prefer to actually read something, but I really like the idea of giving you something free that you could look at and not just listen to me talking about, but you could actually see and read what I'm talking about this time. So do check it out. I look forward to talking to you guys again. Really enjoying the Aftermath podcast. I love the Mad Max stuff last time, so I look forward to seeing what comes into this show this week. And yeah, stay out of the shadows.
All right, so now we're going to get into the emails, and we have some pretty good ones here. So pretty good discussions. We're running. We're probably going to run this one a little bit long, but I don't think anybody will mind. We have like four or five. I think we have five emails here, and I'll just go ahead and read this first one. I guess Jonathan and I will alternate a little bit, but or something. But okay, so this first one, it says, "Hey, awesome show. I've been into the post-apocalyptic genre for about a year now, and I really like what you guys are doing. I'm one of the old Guildcast listeners." Oh, cool. One of the original Guildcast listeners. So it's great to listen to another podcast from Sean. One suggestion for a topic is I Am Legend. You can talk about the movie, but I'm mostly thinking of the book. The book is really great and definitely fits into the post-apocalyptic genre. Look forward to listening to the show, Simon. Did you see the movie or read the book?
Oh, I've seen the movie and read the book, and I will tell you, the movie was fantastic, but I will tell you, he's not kidding. If you've never got a chance to read that book, it's going to blow your mind because it's quite a bit different than the movie.
I need to do that because I like the movie, and, you know, to be honest, I'm not the biggest Will Smith fan, but I like the movie. I thought it had some great, I don't know, like the part where he's driving in the car and like hunting.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
but yeah. So the book is much better. You definitely recommend it.
Well, yeah, and I'll just touch on it really quick. Basically, in the book, they're essentially vampires. And the cool thing about the book versus the movie is, in the movie, they're just sitting. They're basically setting traps to wait for him to fall, so that, you know, to screw up, so that they can get him. In the book, they're doing things to basically get him, call him out. They're trying to get him to screw up that way. And you get a lot of dialogue between the infected outside and him inside trying to resist them. And it's pretty mind-blowing.
Oh, cool. Very cool. That sounds good. I'll definitely have to check that out. You know, the thing about me is I love to read. I absolutely love it. But I fall asleep after two pages. I don't know. Maybe it's because I always read really late at night. I don't know what it is. But yeah, I'll definitely check that out. That sounds cool. All right, you want to read this next one?
Sure. It says, "Hi, Sean and Jonathan. First, it's great to see a show on the post-apocalyptic genre, and I'm a fan of some of your other podcasts. Also, I hate you two." You know, first time I read this, I'm like, "What? Hey, Mom? Hello, Mom?" No. And he says, "Just kidding. I only say that because I was actually considering doing the same thing, and you guys beat me to it." So, yeah, I apologize. We felt the time was right, and I know that feeling. I've had knowing that you had an idea brewing in your mind, and here comes some guy off the street who's like, who do you think you are? You know, so. But hopefully we're doing an adequate job for you. But he says, I'm a tabletop RPG publisher designer, and my flagship product is Darwin's World, a post-apocalyptic game. I also do a podcast with one of my designers, and we always find ourselves talking about Fallout and the post-apocalyptic genre, since it's one of our favorite genres. We talk about it so much, I was thinking about doing a PA-only podcast as well. But alas, I probably won't do that since you two gents are doing it. I'll just sit back and enjoy your show." We're going to have to get him on. I like this guy. Anyhow, yeah. If you guys ever talk about tabletop PA games, let me know. I can give you two some suggestions and topics. I know everything there is to know about the genre on the tabletop. Duck and cover, Chris. His name is Chris Davis. So, RPGObjects.com. I am very familiar with that site.
Oh, really? Yeah,
yes.
That's where he's from. When he emailed me, I told him, I wrote him back and I said, hey, you know, we got to have you on the show sometime, because he says he designs this game, this Darwin's World, and I'd love to talk to him. So we'll probably have him on sometime.
Definitely.
Have you used RPG Objects before?
You know, I have. I do a lot with it, with a lot of the hobbyist game designing I've been doing. They sell a lot of the little RPG tiles you can use to design your own dungeons, and I've been a freak for those, like the different tile sets you can buy to create your own dungeons designs, and RPG Objects, just a great site.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it'd be great to have him on, though. And what's funny is he actually wrote back a few days later, and he says, hey guys, listened to show 2 last week and wanted to send some feedback. First, great show. Mad Max is a nice starting point for your first full show. Good choice. I enjoyed it very much. One comment I have concerns spoilers. One thing that I find somewhat disappointing in most, if not all, podcasts is the fear of spoilers. Sometimes when I listen to a podcast, I would like to hear a critical discussion of a game or movie that includes talking about specifics. I understand not wanting to spoil new games, movies, etc., but anything that has been out for a while, say over 1 or 2 years, I think you should consider discussing without worrying about spoilers. For example, when you were talking about Mad Max, you were worried about talking about the ending. I'm betting most of the people listening to a post-apocalyptic podcast have seen Mad Max. Just my 2 cents. Also, I wanted to point out some interesting PA material you might want to check out, reading material you might want to check out. Wastelands, Stories of the Apocalypse. I got this collection of short stories last year and have enjoyed it. The one titled When Sysadmins Rule the World has been my favorite so far. If you do haven't seen it, it's worth checking out. And then he gives a link to it, and that's by Stephen King, who I absolutely love.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, looking forward to the next show, Chris. So that is a great topic. We talked about that on the first show, that we were kind of concerned about spoilers, and we didn't know how to approach it. And then you start realizing that, hey, you can't really not talk about spoilers, because if you want to talk about what features you liked in the game or movie or whatever, you're going to talk about the parts that you love the best, which are, you know, probably going to be spoilers. So
right.
I think he brings up a good point. You know, if it's an older thing, you just have to kind of assume that they've already read it or seen it. So what do you think about it?
You know, that's a good question, because I have had, you know, this is kind of looking back at the Online Gamers Anthology show. You know, I touched a little bit on things that could be considered spoiler. And I know I did have a few comments from people that were like, hey, I'm just now playing it for the first time. And I think what we'll do, maybe we can find kind of the middle ground, because we've, on a lot of the things we're talking about, they are movies or games that have been out for about 15 years. The exception to it would be games that have kind of found a reemergence because of new games. Like, for example, Fallout 1 and 2, you know, people are just now getting into that for the first time because Fallout 3 brought it back into the limelight. And maybe what we can kind of do is see, you know, where is this particular thing we're going to talk about standing on that? You know, if it's a show that, you know, really, you know, like Mad Max, for example, really has been, you know, that old, you know, talking about it isn't a big deal. But if it's something where it's a movie or a game we're going to talk about that has had some, you know, new, you know, people wanting to come back and check it out for the first time, you know, for example, like Fallout 1 and 2, maybe we'll kind of, you know, find a gray area there, like, well, maybe we won't tell too much because we know people are kind of coming in droves to re-see it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I would rather not spoil it than spoil it. I think, I'd kind of go for the benefit of the doubt there. But at the same time, like you said, you know, Mad Max, there's a pretty good chance anyone listening to this podcast has at least maybe seen some of it. You know, maybe they haven't seen the entire thing, but I don't think that would be a big deal. Well, and also the thing about Mad Max is pretty much the entire plot is shown in the preview.
That's true. So. That's true. Well, and there will be exceptions to the rule. Like, there are some things where I will tell you right now, we will probably not be giving spoilers to. Like, for example, for those of you who have seen it, the show Jericho, I don't know if I dare give spoilers on that, because some of the spoilers on that, it's kind of like watching Lost. They're so mind-blowing, and they slap you in the face so hard when you first see it. I don't think I dare tell you anything. You know, when we talk about that, you know, hopefully we can give you enough warning to really quick go see it, because... because there's a lot of spoilers in that we could talk about. It would break your heart if once you saw it.
Yeah, I haven't seen them all yet. They actually have it on Netflix streaming, and I've been trying to catch up on it. And by the time I catch up and I watch, you know, the entire both seasons, you can bet that we're going to be talking about that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love it so far. It's
fantastic
great.
Show.
Okay, so you want to read this next email?
Sure. It says, "Gentlemen, I think you're onto something here with your new podcast. I look forward to future installments. Good luck to both of you." Oh, thank you. "I do have a question. I'm not sure it's one you can answer on your podcast, but I hope it's one you will give or have given some thought to. In your words, why do you think that there is an appeal for the post-apocalyptic genre? The worlds explored are often dark and bleak, and the sense of hopelessness is often palpable. Things rarely seem to end happily ever after, so why are we drawn to these dark futures? Does it tap into something primal, perhaps our survival instinct? Does it make us appreciate our current surroundings more? Is there something a little sadistic going on in there as well? Well, don't get me wrong, I'm an ardent fan of the genre, but I have a tough time explaining to friends why I'm particularly drawn to it. Thank you very much, RC." You know what? That is a question. As we've been doing the show, I had to kind of stop and go, what is it about this that draws me to it? And you know, if I were to kind of look at it, and this is just kind of off the top of my head, I would say for me, it is the survival instinct. It's this ability to finally, you know, realize that if we don't, you know, use all this knowledge we've gained and think, you know, in a different terms than we think in our normal lives, that you won't survive. And this survival instinct that's built into all of us of, you know, protecting our families and you know, from things that can happen. I think that is a lot of why I really dig on it.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, if you think about when the popularity waves have peaked for post-apocalyptic, it's been, you know, the 50s when we had the dangers of a nuclear war or whatever, when we had the atom bomb and all that right after Hiroshima and all that, people got really scared about that. We had the whole duck and cover campaign and all that. And then you get into like the 80s when there was the Cold War and when we had, you know, when it was, oh, the Russians, you know, they're going to bomb us. And everybody was so paranoid about that. And you see all those movies that came out. There's a whole bunch of movies that came out in the 80s that were all about the nuclear war and the what would happen after. You know, there's like The Day After and Testament and Threads and all these movies like that, which are all – they focus on that because that was the political stance of the time. And now we're kind of in that same situation, but it's not really a threat from any one and of course, I'm speaking as an American here. I know we don't have all American listeners, but speaking as an American, I guess, and this is global too. But you know, there is this threat of war at all times, and I think that now we're in kind of this economic slump where we're thinking basically the same type of thing as with the Great Depression, where we need to start, like you said, protecting our families and thinking about alternatives to this kind of laissez-faire, attitude we've had towards life. And I think that now it's like, hey, you know what? This is a possibility. Something could happen. One thing I've noticed too, and I was thinking about this actually the other day, this might not be a proper determiner, I'm not sure, but on our Facebook group, we have a lot of people who aren't American. And I think that the cultures are a little bit different. But what I wonder, and I don't even pretend to know what things are like in other countries because I don't live over there, but I wonder if it's something else in another country as far as the cultural interpretation of the whole bleakness, like he said, of an apocalypse. So I wonder, I would like to know about that. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm curious about. Like, why, as for other countries, why they're interested in it as opposed to me being an American, why I'm interested in it. I wonder if that plays a big of a part in it.
Oh yeah, no, I would be curious too, because I mean, we as Americans, I think we're kind of easy to read there. I mean, part of the reason we like to see things blow up is because we don't like telemarketers and we don't want to pay taxes anymore. And so the idea of having a nuclear war is like, hey, there we go. No, I kid. Actually, I think he was onto something also when he said that there's something a little sadistic going on here as well. I mean, I think we as humans, we have this interesting natural fascination with destruction, and the idea of a nuclear war completely changing the face of the earth. I mean, you look at people who chase tornadoes. Why? Why do they chase tornadoes? You know, I'm one of those. I like, you watch tornadoes and you're just drawn to it because it's this complete insane natural thing of destruction, and yet the idea of having a nuclear war where these massive bombs could so drastically change our world, we have this twisted fascination with things like that. And, you know, they did well with Fallout 3 because they play right into that dark humor, you know, and it makes you wonder why that is. But, you know, there's a lot of people who are saying we probably evolved that way, but, you know, like you said, I'd be curious as to why it is that people who aren't American, you know, is it different for them as opposed to us? Is, you know, that's interesting. We could go on for hours on that.
Yeah, and that could be an ongoing thing on this show, you know, talking about what is our fascination with post-apocalyptic genre. And I would make a call out, you know, to anyone listening to this. If you have any recommendations for a book that explains something like that, like the psychology of our fascination with something like that, I would love to read it. So, you know, if you know of anything like that, email us, let us know, because I would definitely read something like that.
Definitely.
Cool. Okay, so let's move on to the next email. This is our last one, actually. Yeah. Okay, it says, I was listening to show number 2, and I hear you briefly talk about getting the Fallout 3 DLC, downloadable content. I remember setting up Games for Windows Live and Xbox Live to be annoying, and thought it might be nice if you did a tutorial for it so anyone who might be having problems can get everything working right. I think a lot of people can get confused with it because there's actually 2 services you need to sign up for instead of just one. There's Games for Windows Live, and then there's Xbox Live. And they are actually separate services, but Games for Windows Live is just a service for linking to Xbox Live. It's really annoying how Microsoft set it up. I guess if you already have Xbox Live, it's not as confusing, but those without one need an account with that, and it does feel weird having to sign up twice just to add something to your game. If you get a free Xbox Live Silver account and link your Windows Live account to it, you will still get things like achievements, in-game friends list, and in-game messaging, and you can even talk to people on Xbox Live friends while they play games. Other games like Halo 2 also support this stuff, and it is required to play that game online. I just thought it might be nice if you explain to other people how to do it, because even if they don't want the DLC, they can still get all the other stuff I mentioned. I know some people really like achievements. Anyway, it was just a thought. Wolfenhex.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think he pretty much explained it right there. I mean, that's more than I knew. I don't have an Xbox 360, so I never got to experiment with that. But I do know that when you they are linked in kind of a weird way. Like, even when you buy Games for Windows Live points, they're actually called Xbox points. And it's a little confusing. Like, if you only have a PC and you don't have an Xbox and you go on there to buy the points, it'll say at one point it kind of just switches terminology. And it's like, you know, it'll say buy Games for Windows Live points and you put yes, 1,000 points. And then it'll say in your summary of what's like your shopping cart, it'll say Xbox Live points 1,000. And I remember seeing that and thinking, oh, wait a minute. Wait, I don't want to buy Xbox Live points, but it's actually the same thing. So I think that might get a little confusing for people. So that's definitely a good point that he brings up. Now, do you have an Xbox 360?
I sure do. In fact, it's funny. He mentioned something that I took for granted at the time and didn't even know it. And that is I have an Xbox 360. I already had an Xbox Live account. And so when I jumped into Games for Windows Live, I'm just like, oh, handy. You know, I can just link right to my Xbox Live account and there's my avatar and there's my, you know, my achievements. And they do share across. I mean, the achievements you get on Games for Windows Live do carry across to your 360. And for those of you out there who my online name is Beans and Cheese, if you'd like to link to me and laugh at me at the fact that I have to start over and get all these achievements again. So and it's interesting though. I mean, my guess for why they did it this way, you're right, it actually is kind of like ridiculous. It's kind of like going back to Final Fantasy Online and going, why am I signing up for 3 different accounts just to get one game? My guess is it looks like they built the Games for Windows Live stuff on top of the Xbox platform. The live stuff was already there. They just had to make a Windows doorway to get through it. It is a little bit irritating, but the nice thing is, like he says, once you get through that, everything shares across. You know, not just the download content, but the fact that, in fact, this happened the other day. You know, I can jump onto, you know, Fallout 3, and while I'm in Fallout 3, you know, send a message to my friend who might be playing on his Xbox. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool the way it links like that. It's just too bad there's so much confusion here and there.
Yeah, they need to explain that a little bit better, because I took it for granted because I'm like, oh, Xbox Live, that's cool, I can just do it like this. But it didn't even dawn on me. I'm like, well, yeah, but somebody who didn't do it that way, they're still having to sign up for two different accounts. And just a little side note here for those of you who wonder why my Xbox name is Beans and Cheese. When I got my Xbox, I happened to be in Target and we were going down the food aisle and I thought, oh, there's a name. So
that's awesome.
And there it is. And now you know.
From the mind of Jonathan.
From the mind of Jonathan. It's dark. Don't go in. No, I'm just kidding.
So that'll be just about it for us. That'll wrap up the show, this episode 3. And I can't believe we're already on 3 episodes. Seems like we just started.
Yeah.
But So, if you want to check us out, you can go to our Facebook page, which will be linked in the show notes. You can go to our Twitter account, which we will be using quite a bit. I mean, if you haven't signed up for it yet and you're a little, scared to get on the whole, Twitter thing and it's, technology scares you and everything, hey, I understand. But we update it all the time. I update it every time I see any kind of post-apocalyptic news, I'll throw it up on there. And sometimes it's immediately, as soon as I see it, because I like to get the latest news out, So,
oh, yeah.
So yeah, if you want to be caught up with the latest on anything like that, you can just subscribe to our little Twitter feed there. And also, we are now a part of the Virgin Worlds Collective, I'm happy to say. It's taken 6 years to get – no, not really 6 years. It's taken a little while, but we're now on the Virgin Worlds Collective. And I'm very excited about that because – Jonathan and I have our other podcasts on the Virgin Worlds Collective, so it's kind of cool to be back, like in that community and be within our little circle of podcast friends and everything. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, if you want to check it out, if you're listening to us and you've never heard of Virgin Worlds, go over there to virginworlds.com, VirginWorlds. If I spelled that right, virginworlds.com, and you can check out, there's a podcast collective, and basically what it is it's a collective of MMO podcasts, and it's strayed a little bit, like this show isn't really about MMOs. It's strayed just a little bit, like John, who does the out of print segment that we played earlier, he does, a podcast on there called Limited Edition, and it's all about comic books. And Jonathan does the Online Gamers Anthology, which is all about the old days of gaming. And I do a couple podcasts on there as well. So if you the chances are, if there's something that you want to hear about some type of MMO or some kind of gaming related thing, chances are there's a podcast about it. So you can head on over there and you can check that out. Brent's a great guy. He's the one who runs the site, and I'm sure he'll love getting some new listeners.
Absolutely. Yeah, like you said, the Virgin Worlds Collective, it's probably some of the most fantastic podcasters you'll ever listen to. Each one of them, it's a labor of love for what they talk about, what they do, and you couldn't pick a better group of guys.
That's so true, especially that Jonathan guy. That's
yeah, right. he's kind of wacky. I don't know.
I've heard that. So I guess that'll be about it for this show. We'll go ahead and wrap it up. Next show, we don't really know what we're going to do yet. We might do a themed show, but we'll see what it's like as far as news and emails and see what we get. But yeah, if you want to email us, it's show@throughtheaftermath.com. And don't forget to go to our website at throughtheaftermath.com. And you can check out our complete show notes, which we also have the show notes mirrored at Virgin World. So you can check them out there as well. And just participate a little bit in the discussion on the comments on the show at Virgin Worlds, and we'll read a little bit, especially in the emails. We love to read emails, so
oh yeah,
definitely do that.
So until we talk to you next time, make sure you stay alive out there, and I will do my best to get this crate down that hill and up. I'm closer to you than I thought. You're only about a mile away from me. Well, that was embarrassing. I could have just ran it. I could have been in the studio with you.